So this morning we have the beginning of Jesus' public ministry, following upon his baptism by John in the Jordan. This is the first of his signs. And what we find is we find the presence of the woman, a sinless woman, which brings us back to the very beginning of the Bible, when we also began with a sinless woman. So here we have Eve, and in Mary we have the new Eve. The new Eve at the beginning of the gospel, when it opens up for us, is approached by an angel. Eve herself in the garden was approached by the serpent, the dark angel. Mary proved to be obedient. Eve proved to be disobedient. But see, you can see here there's this parallel going on. The narrative that brought us to disaster began with a woman, and the narrative that brings us to redemption begins with a woman. Because and this is true in our own lives, the path we follow that leads us to disaster and death is the path we're going to have to go through in order to get back to redemption. There needs to be victory in whatever it is that's defeating us. And that's what we have happening here. Eve, when she was approached by the serpent, was asked, "Did God really say that you shouldn't eat from any of the trees of the garden? Is he that mean and vicious that he would not permit that?" And of course, she would then go on and make her first mistake, which was to dialogue with this dark creature, because he'll outwit us every time we attempt to dialogue with him. He's smarter than we are, and he outwitted Eve. And Eve ate the fruit that was forbidden. That was the one thing God said, was don't eat the fruit of this tree, the one tree. Mary, however, comes on the scene, and she goes to Jesus and says, they have no wine. And he says, woman, hearkening back to the woman in Genesis, I will put enmity between you and the woman. Well, here she is. This is the woman. What has this to do with me? And then Mary simply says, do whatever he tells you. This is the Son of the living God. What does Eve say to Adam? Here, eat this fruit. When God had said, don't eat that fruit. Now, I know you might think, well, doesn't that mean that Eve is to blame for Adam's sin? Well, that's what Adam thought. He blamed Eve for his sin, but only sinners blame others for their own sin. And, of course, that's part of our problem. We're blaming everyone else but ourselves for our wrongdoing. Adam fell as well, freely. And we go into disaster. What is the fruit of the fall of Adam and Eve? We fall out of communion with God in body, soul, and spirit. We fall out of communion with God in body, soul, and spirit. So the body goes to the grave. Our soul is enveloped in darkness, easily deceived, and our spirit is bent over. Instead of reaching to the eternal, we're bent over. And we become weary in our spirit. We become tired. And we start to, well, it's the old man, it's the old woman that Paul talks about. We run out of gas when it comes to serving the living God. That's our spiritual malaise, if you will. That's the fruit of the fall. Well, here, as the fall began with a woman, so now our redemption begins with a woman. And this begins the process of undoing the damage that was visited upon us by our first parents. Reversing it, undoing it, unraveling it, and culminating where once again we find ourselves at the tree as in the Garden of Eden, only this time we find ourselves at the tree of the living God on Calvary. And of course, as the tree in the Garden of Eden, there was the woman, there was the man, there was Eve, and there was Adam. So on Calvary, we have the woman at the foot of the cross and the new Adam upon the cross, unraveling the damage done to us by our first ancestors, our first parents, working our salvation. And see, this is the height of the dedication of God to us as human beings. The cross is the height because it is the bridal chamber of the Lord, the cross is, which we commemorate here in this Eucharist. The wedding feast began with the incarnation when the woman is approached by an angel and says, "Let it be done unto me according to your word," even though what you're saying is absolutely impossible by human reason standards. "In my faith I say yes to you," and she conceives a child. But that is only the beginning of the wedding banquet. Here we have a wedding, a Cana. It's the beginning of the public ministry that's going to unravel our death. And on the cross, we have the intimacy of the bridal chamber. You see, in marriage, at the altar, you exchange vows. But the marriage itself is consummated in the bridal chamber. That's something that occurs later, after you've exchanged vows and made a covenant with each other at the altar. You consummate that marriage by going to the bridal chamber. And see, that's what's happening on the cross, is we have the consummation of the marriage between God and our humanity that undoes our death, that redeems us. And in John's gospel, with this wedding imagery that we have starting today, when we come to the cross, it's in John's gospel that Jesus says, "It is finished. It is finished." "It is finished" translates from the Latin Vulgate, the Latin words consummatum est, which can also be translated, "It is consummated." What is consummated? God's marriage with our humanity. He could have come among us and said, "You know what? I'm going to unite myself only with what I like about you, and I'm going to ignore all the unpleasant stuff about you. Your death, your manipulations, your lying, your cheating, I want nothing to do with that. That's yours, and that's your problem. I'm just going to go for what I like about you, what agrees with me, and that's what I'm going to unite myself to." But see, on the cross, that's not what's happening. He's embracing our dead humanity by dying. And he is fully consummating the wedding of God with our humanity by uniting himself wholly, completely, and entirely with our body, our soul, and our spirit. He's uniting himself with our body, this dead body, by dying on the cross. He's uniting himself with our soul and how troubled we can feel because he's not feeling good on the cross. It's absolutely miserable. And he's uniting himself with our spirit that grows weary when it's tried, when he cries out, my God, why have you abandoned me? He's suffering the absence of God upon the cross, the way we do in our exile from God. He's embracing that. The consummation, the marriage, is total union with our dead humanity so he can revive it. And that's what we are receiving here at this Eucharist. This is the bridal chamber from which we are wedded to God in this Eucharist. And it is indeed consummated. And this is our God. This is how he is with us. So it's significant that we have in the gospel the context of a wedding for Jesus to begin revealing his first sign, which will culminate with the height of his glory manifest upon the cross when he embraces the sum total of our fallen humanity, which is all we had to give him. And he took it to himself completely, fully, and totally, embracing it. And so from this altar, he comes to us in body, blood, soul, and divinity in order to unite with you and be married to you in body, blood, soul, and spirit. That's what he comes offering us. The wedding feast of the Lamb is the Eucharist. And from the altar, we have simply to say yes to this marriage that God initiated with us, that God completed with us, and that now God seeks to sow with us in this covenant of his blood. He comes to you today. You are mine. You belong to me. I claim you in body, blood, soul, and spirit. Our body, yes, it will go to the grave. What's the difference for a man or a woman who's come here to this altar, to this banquet table? The difference is our body is going to go to the ground with a pledge of future glory given it every time we've come to the Eucharist. And that makes a difference. It makes all the difference that the body would go to the grave with a pledge of future glory because Christ has wedded himself to us. God has claimed us as his own upon the cross, which we commemorate in this Eucharist. Let's say yes to that. Let's surrender ourselves to it and be healed.